Imagine working full-time, yet sleeping in your car because rent remains out of reach. This isn't dystopian fiction. It's the lived reality Barbara Ehrenreich documented by going undercover as a low-wage worker. Her groundbreaking experiment began over a $30 lunch with Harper's editor Lewis Lapham. When discussing how anyone survives on minimum wage, Lapham simply replied, "You should try it." Despite having advantages most low-wage workers lack, being white, English-speaking, healthy, and childless, Ehrenreich quickly discovered the brutal economics of working poverty. What makes nickel-and-dimed so powerful isn't just the statistics about inequality, but the visceral experience of invisibility. As a waitress, Ehrenreich wasn't Barbara anymore, just baby, honey, or girl. The work wasn't just physically demanding, but psychologically demeaning. Managers forbade sitting even during slow periods, forcing theatrical busy work like wiping already clean surfaces. Most shocking were her coworkers' living situations. Gail shared a flophouse room for $250 weekly, Claude, the cook, shared a two-room apartment with three others, and Joan, despite her tasteful thrift shop outfits, lived in a van behind a shopping center. In poverty, starting conditions determine everything. There are no secret economies nourishing the poor, only extra costs. Without enough money for apartment deposits, you pay exorbitant weekly room rates. Without a kitchen, you can't economize with batch cooking. Without health insurance, minor health issues become catastrophic expenses. The numbers simply didn't add up. While waitressing in Florida, Ehrenreich discovered that even working full-time, she'd be over $100 short on rent despite having no expenses to cut. She couldn't even economize with lentil stews because she lacked basic cooking equipment. When she took a second job at Jerry's restaurant, the physical toll became unbearable. She popped ibuprofen constantly for a repetitive stress injury that, in her normal life, would warrant rest. What's most striking is how the system perpetuates itself. When the rich and poor compete for housing, the poor don't stand a chance. While rents respond dramatically to market forces, wages remain stubbornly flat despite widespread labor shortages. Cities everywhere displayed now hiring signs, yet wages near the bottom stayed stagnant. Have you ever wondered why someone wouldn't just leave for a better paying job? The poorer people are, the more constrained their mobility becomes. In Maine, Ehrenreich joined the Maids, where the physical demands were extraordinary. Wearing a heavy backpack vacuum while bending to dust baseboards left her gasping for breath. Most houses required 42 minutes of nonstop movement, with barely enough time to drink water between locations. What struck her most was the invisibility. Clients rarely acknowledge the cleaning teams as human beings. One woman continued a phone conversation about her decorator while stepping over Ehrenreich as she scrubbed the kitchen floor. Another left a note complaining about dust under a bed, but never said hello to the people cleaning her home. Her teammates revealed the precarious economics of their lives. Holly, a pregnant 20-year-old, worked despite severe morning sickness because her husband insisted they needed the money. Ted, the boss, paid $6.65 per hour, while charging clients $25 per person hour. Most workers couldn't afford cars and depended on company transportation, effectively extending their workday by hours. Think about it. How many times have you walked into a freshly cleaned hotel room without considering the person who made it spotless? How often do we see the hands that prepare our food, stock our shelves, or care for our elderly? For her final experiment, Ehrenreich worked at Walmart in Minnesota. The personality tests and interviews were soul-draining exercises in compliance, with drug tests particularly troubling. Her positive qualities could be negated by her urine. Despite orientation's emphasis on aggressive hospitality, her actual job involved endlessly reorganizing customer-created chaos. Management warned against their pet peeve of associates talking, considering it time theft. What surprised Ehrenreich most was the psychological impact. When treated as untrustworthy, you begin feeling less trustworthy. Constant reminders of your lowly status lead to acceptance of that position. She was shocked by the surrender of basic rights. Management could legally search purses on company property. Drug testing required urinating with an aide present. Personality tests probed private matters like moods of self-pity. Rules against gossip prevented workers from airing grievances or organizing. Most coworkers were better cushioned than she was. They lived with family or worked multiple jobs. Lynn worked at Walmart 6 hours daily plus 8 at a factory. The radio grill cook maintained 2 other jobs. After weeks of struggling, Aaron Wright concluded that something is fundamentally wrong when a healthy person with a working car can barely support herself through labor. The problem is simple. Wages are too low and rents too high. Returning to her place in the upper socioeconomic spectrum after her experiment was like entering a magical world where needs are met effortlessly. Yet an alarming optical property of our polarized society makes the poor almost invisible to their economic superiors. While the poor can see the affluent on television, the affluent rarely recognize the poor. This blindness stems partly from segregation of spaces and services. As public institutions deteriorate, the affluent retreat to private schools, gated communities, exclusive stores, and private transportation. Even affluent youth now prefer career-relevant internships to sweaty, low-paid summer jobs that might expose them to different social classes. The non-poor often view poverty as sustainable, austere, but manageable. What's harder to see is poverty as acute distress, lunches of Doritos causing faintness during shifts, homes that are actually cars, injuries worked through because there's no sick pay. These aren't sustainable lifestyle choices, but emergency situations. When Nickel and Dimed was published in 2001, readers approached Aaron Reich saying, "I never thought," or "I hadn't realized." Most gratifying were stories from low-wage workers themselves: a new mother without electricity, a woman with cancer but no insurance, a homeless man writing from a library computer. The working poor are society's greatest philanthropists, though few recognize their involuntary sacrifice. They neglect their own children to care for others. They live in substandard housing so others' homes remain perfect. They endure privation to keep inflation low and stock prices high. As Aaron Reich's coworker Gail put it, "You give and you give." Poverty isn't just about insufficient money. It's a parallel universe with its own harsh physics. In this reality, working multiple jobs doesn't lead to getting ahead. Perfect attendance doesn't guarantee keeping your position. Saving becomes impossible when every paycheck is already spent on basic survival. How long can society sustain itself when those who clean its offices, serve its food, and care for its children cannot live with dignity? Someday, these workers will demand fair compensation. The cost of goods might rise to reflect their true value, but we'll all benefit from a more equitable society. The alternative, subsidizing middle-class comfort with the sacrifices of the working poor, is both morally and practically unsustainable. The question isn't whether we can afford living wages, but whether we can afford not to.